You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, Pat Lane. As always, today is episode 48. That would make it the Torrey Hunter episode, or perhaps for you NASCAR heads, the Jimmy Johnson episode. But I'm going to go with the Pablo Sandoval episode. That's right, haters. We're going the Pablo Sandoval episode. But here's the thing about the Pablo Sandoval episode, right? This episode isn't like the fat, out of shape, and terrible Red Sox Pablo Sandoval. This is like the one of the best hitters in the history of the World Series, Pablo Sandoval episode, because this is going to be a fire episode. Today we have Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon and the Locked On Patriots podcast coming on. We're going to talk about, you know, all sorts of different things about the Brandon Cooks trade, about the Patriots' upcoming draft, and kind of where they're looking for in the future. Really, really good discussion with him. You do not want to miss that, that's for sure. Also, after that, I get the three-minute drill, and then this week in sports history, as always. So, without further ado, let's get us into the interview with Mark Schofield. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show Mark Schofield. He is from InsideThePylon.com and the Locked On Patriots podcast, one of the most knowledgeable guys about the Patriots, so we appreciate him coming on. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Pat, thanks so much for having me on. Thanks for the kind words and the intro there. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So obviously yesterday, some crazy news. Yes. Well, I guess if you're listening to this on Thursday, it was 2 days ago, but, the Brandon Cooks trade, kind of came out of left field, surprised some people, I guess maybe with Belichick and knowing the way he likes to get value for his players and his assets, it probably shouldn't have come out of left field, but I know it surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, I mean, it surprised me too, Pat. And, you know, I think like you said there, you know, given what we know about Belichick and how he conducts business, it probably shouldn't have surprised us. I mean, Cooks is going to look to get paid. He's going to look to renegotiate a new contract. So it's one of those deals like we saw with other guys with Chandler Jones and others where rather than extend a guy, rather than give somebody a big contract, might as well get what they can for him. And so they move up in terms of, you know, getting a better first round pick than they traded for him. Now they've got two picks now at 23 and 31 in the first round. And that's allowed everybody to sort of engage in some speculation over the past 24 hours. What are they going to do? You know, are they making the move up? Because, you know, and I was on radio in Charlotte this morning. And that was the first question they asked me. Are the Patriots going to go get a quarterback? Because when you see a team accumulate first round picks or move up in the first round, that's your first thought. But as we're probably going to talk about, that's probably not what Belichick's going to do. I mean, it would seem to be sort of not the best move given where they are right now, given the roster as it's currently constructed. But you can't help but speculate. We know they were going to be interested in a quarterback this draft. You know that they were probably going to draft somebody at this point, given the fact that Brady is getting older, that window is going to close. And now it allows us to wonder, you know, Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, who knows? So it will be interesting. But as far as the Cooks trade, yeah, this is typical Belichick. Get what you can out of a guy during the season. If you can maximize value by moving him, that's what he's going to do.
Right. Well, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I you know, and we'll touch on where they'll go and whether they'll draft a quarterback or not. But I think they won the trade. I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, you got to be kidding me. They traded Cooks. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, number 23 overall. And they gave up Cooks in a fourth, but they got back 23 and a sixth. Like, I mean, I think that's a huge win for the Patriots there, especially where they definitely weren't going to re-sign him at the end of the year. There was no way they were paying him $15 million. And so, you know, I think that trade-wise, it was a big win for the Patriots. And, you know, the Rams are obviously, clear with you, loading up, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but even still, you're giving up a lot for, you know, 1 year of a receiver unless you can kind of tempt him to stick around, you know?
Right. And, you know, the word is that they are going to explore re-signing him. They're going to try to work on an extension with him. But, you know, the Rams are, you know, they're in that advantageous position where you've got a rookie quarterback playing well in his rookie deal. So you can go and spend capital, draft capital, salary cap space, whatever you want on other positions. I mean, that's what the Rams are doing. That's what the Eagles were able to do this year with Carson Wentz on his deal. Patriots have to do other things. You know, they're paying Brady a little bit more than, you know, most quarterbacks in the league. So they've got to spread money and do other things different ways. And by getting that, you know, like you said, Pat, by getting 23, that opens up a lot of options. They can package 23 and 31 and move up into the teens. They can add stuff to that and try to get into the, you know, 8, 9, 10 range. So there's things they can do. They can stand pat. I mean, the last time they had two first-round picks was Dante Hightower and Chandler Jones. They addressed positions of need, positions that would contribute right away. They didn't go get a quarterback back then, so maybe they don't do it now. And maybe they stay tight at 23 and 31 and get two guys that they need at different spots. Or maybe they get a quarterback. I mean, it gives them some versatility in how they want to address the first round.
Yeah. I think, interestingly enough, in 2012, they actually traded up with both of those picks, like one or two picks, because they had identified those two guys, right? So, I mean, maybe you see something like that. But, you know, we were talking about it before we started the interview, but I can't imagine, you know, them giving up. Because first of all, like you said, they're going to get into the teens. If they package 23 and 31, it gets them into the teens. If they want, you know, Josh Rosen, which I know is your guy, or, you know, whoever else, one of those other guys, Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield or whoever else, they're going to have to get up into the top five. And that means they're going to have to give up, you know, maybe another first round pick or, you know, a second and a third round pick. And I don't see the benefit of doing that.
Yeah, it would be tough to do. I mean, and not that everybody uses this, but that sort of like draft guide value chart, draft pick value chart, to try to get to two, because I think that's where you'd have to get. You'd have to get in front of the Jets at three. You know, you'd have to trade all five of the picks they have in the first three rounds plus extra stuff to get to two. And is that really worth it when you've got maybe two good years of Brady left? When you've got maybe two good years of Gronkowski left? Does it really make sense to mortgage, you know, them now to go get Josh Rosen? And as much as I like Josh Rosen, if you draft him and you're the New England Patriots, he's not seeing the field for 2 years. You know, he's not going to start over Tom Brady. So it doesn't make sense. Like, I'd much rather them, you know, if they've identified, say, like a Lamar Jackson or a Mason Rudolph, and he's still on the board at, say, 14, right before the Arizona Cardinals pick, and you're worried about them, then maybe try to get up to 14. And if you can't, fine, see how the chips fall, draft your two guys. Maybe if one of these guys gets past, you know, 15, then maybe move up. But I'm much more comfortable, and this was the thought I had before they made this trade, you know, staying pat at 31, not shooting your shot on first round quarterback, drafting a guy like, say, a Mike White, a Kyle Lauletta, one of these, you know, good, solid guys that you can develop with the 2 years you have with Brady, and address other positions of need so you can make another Super Bowl run next year with the greatest quarterback of all time on your roster.
Yeah. I mean, that makes so much more sense. And they've done that twice and been pretty successful. I mean, you know, I mean, you're not going to hit on all of them, but Jimmy G obviously looks pretty darn good. And Jacoby Brissett played very well for Indianapolis last year. So, you know, those are two mid-round quarterbacks that you're like, oh my God, like, you know, they kind of hit on both of those guys. Now, the one thing I know about Kyle Lauletta is that there's no way the Patriots are going to draft him, because everybody is talking about the Patriots drafting him.
That's exactly right, Pat. I mean, you know this as well as I do, as well as anybody else does. When you try to get into that mind of Bill Belichick, it's a scary place, and you can try to predict and you can have all the information available and think you've got it locked down, and he's going to do the exact opposite thing. Right. And that's just the way he is. I mean, he's just unpredictable. And everybody has been saying, look, Kyle Lauletta, there's the lacrosse background, the Naval Academy connections, all that stuff. He's a Patriot for life, right? I'm sure they probably don't even have him on their draft board at this point. That's just the way they work. But, I mean, you know, if you're Mike White, a Logan Woodside, a Chase Litton, like, there are some developmental guys that you can take that flyer on and say the third, fourth round. And if, you know, they don't pan out, you're going to be able to address the quarterback position next year or the year after that. Because, you know, let's remember, 16 drafts since Brady, they've taken 8 quarterbacks. I mean, they basically do it every other year where they're going to draft a quarterback. Because like Belichick said when they drafted Garoppolo, it's better to be a year ahead of schedule than a year behind schedule. Because then you're like the Cowboys the year that Romo got hurt and they didn't have Dak Prescott and they were lost. New England doesn't like to lose seasons. Belichick doesn't like to waste seasons. And so he's going to want to have an answer sooner rather than later. Other thing to remember, they do have Brian Hoyer. I mean, it's not like he's the greatest quarterback of all time or anything like that, but he's a serviceable backup. And so if they draft a more developmental type and say, God forbid, Brady gets hurt, not a season ender, but like a 4-week type thing, and they don't feel comfortable with the rookie, they can run with Brian Hoyer for a couple of weeks. And so it's not a situation where they're desperate to go get a guy. Everybody likes talking about, you know, quarterbacks because it's the position everybody likes to watch. It's the sexy position in football. The fact of the matter is you need 21 other guys on your starting lineup on both sides of the ball, and they have other positions of need to address.
Right. I totally agree. So if they do stay pat at 23 and 31, what are some names out there that maybe, you know, they should look for? There was the kid, I for the life of me cannot remember his name. He's a linebacker from Alabama who they said is all over the field and kind of plays.
Yeah.
That's the
Sean Evans. Yeah.
And so I don't know if he's going to be, I mean, they would some talk about maybe he'd last a 31, but they didn't think he would. And then I was like, as soon as they traded for 23, I was like, wait a second. You know, Rashawn Evans, now that guy might be available at 23 if he's not at 31, and maybe that's the type of guy that they need. And so maybe they don't go Alabama again, but we all know the Saban ties, and the last linebacker they drafted from Alabama worked out pretty darn well. So, you know, maybe you try it again. I don't know. I mean, are there other guys they might be looking at? Or
I look at it and say, you know, three positions – yeah, we'll say three positions of need they could probably address in that range. You know, you could say corner, you could say offensive tackle, you could say linebacker. I definitely think they have to get more athletic at linebacker. Rashawn Evans is a guy they could look at. Leighton Vander Esch, the linebacker from Boise State, he was just a one-year starter, but another athletic kid, had some really good games, had a great game against Oregon, so he's a guy to keep in mind. And Fred Warner, who's probably a reach, I'd say, at 23 or even 31. He's a kid from BYU, very athletic linebacker. I know people like him a lot. He was used at times in the slot, so you can see some versatility with him. But he's somebody that's probably going to be there in the 40s, where, you know, if they decide they're going to address other positions, you could go and grab him in the 40s, whatever it is, 43 or 45, if they cut early in the second. Those are some linebackers. Some offensive tackles, obviously everybody's talking about Colton Miller. I'm not as high on him. But he's definitely athletic enough. He's going to need development, and Dante's probably the guy to develop him. So I guess, you know, if you're going to buy into the fact that he's an athletic kid, very athletic profile, almost elite athleticism, so you could probably look at him and say, look, his athletic ability, his, you know, his burst, his strength, and things like that are going to allow him to stay somewhat productive while he works out the stuff he needs to work out technically. So he could probably work. You know, Matthias Rankin, the kid from Mississippi State, he's getting a lot of late buzz here in the process. He's somebody to watch, but he's probably, again, going to be there in the, you know, in the 40s. And the kid from Oregon, Tyrell Crosby, I think, another good offensive tackle. It's not the best offensive tackle draft. You know, it really starts to fall off, and so they might have to address it earlier. So it might be that they roll with Colton Miller, who's somebody they've sort of, you know, been linked with recently. You know, some corners, Mike Hughes is a nice corner. Carlton Davis, the kid from Auburn, is a nice corner. They're not going to be in a position to get Jair Alexander. He's going to go early in the draft, so they probably won't be able to get him. But there are some nice guys late. Anthony Averett, he's more of a diminutive slot type guy from Alabama. He's somebody to keep an eye on. And finally, look, we got to address edge too. Sam Hubbard, you know, people have been talking about Sam Hubbard. You know, again, he was a converted safety at Ohio State, played some lacrosse. So people like that, you know, he's a guy to keep in mind for the Patriots if they address edge. Other guys like Dorrance Armstrong from Kansas, he's a good player. The kid from Oklahoma, who I just won't even try to pronounce, the double O, let's put it that way, another edge player to look at. But, you know, they could go in a number of different directions. And, you know, I said on my show the other day, look, you know, we all love to think about them going up to get Rosen or maybe, you know, a Lamar Jackson at 23 or something like that. Let's face it. They're going to go Sam Hubbard. They're going to go Colton Miller. They're going to address two positions of need. And that's what Belichick's going to do. And while it might not be the sexy move, it's perhaps the right one to address two positions, two guys that can probably plug and play right away and rebuild around, again, Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think you're probably right. I mean, it makes more sense. And I think defensively too. I mean, I know there were a lot of, you know, injuries defensively at the end of the year last year, and obviously Butler didn't play in the Super Bowl. But to me, it was painfully obvious that they didn't have any playmakers on defense.
Right.
They just didn't have enough guys. And I think Trey Flowers is still kind of developing. I thought he would kind of turn into that elite edge rusher, and it just didn't really happen for me, at least. Now, you know, I mean, he had a decent year, but I was expecting, like, you know, elite level edge rushing from him. And I don't think we really saw that at all this year.
Right.
And that could be, you know, that could be a reflection of the fact that they didn't have great outside linebackers. So he had to set the edge more than he could rush. I don't know scheme wise, but you know, it was like one of those things where I was like, okay, I expected a little bit more out of all those guys. I didn't really get it. And from the linebacker position, it's just like, there's just no playmakers back there. Yeah. And you just, you know, I mean, and for me personally, I mean, you look at the Super Bowl, you know, and you say, okay, the Patriots score and go up with 9.5 minutes left to go. And the, you know, the Eagles get the ball way back in their own end and they drive, you know, all the way down the field, 7.5 minutes, 14 play drive. They convert 2 third downs, a fourth down. Like they couldn't stop them.
Yeah.
And then the Patriots get the ball back and the Eagles stopped them. And it's just like, that's what it takes. You need to have a guy who can make a play on defense. Your defense hasn't made a play all game. Neither defense made a play all game. And, you know, you have to have one guy that can step and make a play. The Patriots didn't have that guy, and the Eagles did, and that was the difference in the game, I think, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, Super Bowl 52 sort of brought into bright light sort of the way that teams have to approach this game right now, particularly up front on the defensive side of the ball. You have to be athletic both at, you know, up the front and at the second level with your linebackers, because if you're not, you're going to get beaten, you know, on those third downs when you can just run a little cross and route and get a wide receiver matched up on a linebacker, and the linebacker's just not athletic enough to hang with them. That's number one. And number two, up front, you know, look what the Eagles were able to do. They kick an edge rusher inside, get him matched up on a guard with a speed package of three edge rushers, things that have given the Patriots nightmares. Think back to the Giants and those Super Bowls. The Patriots need to do something like that. So they've got to, you know, add another edge or two so you can have the ability to get pressure both on the interior and off the edges as well. And again, like you said, got to be more athletic at the second level. I know they've got some linebackers coming back. You're going to get Hightower coming back, but you still need an injection of athleticism there on those third and sixth situations. The guy that can be in the middle of the field, that can run with linebackers, if with receivers if necessary, that can run with running backs if necessary, and make those tackles and get off the field on third down.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. So, okay, I think we really covered the biggest need. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you, was the biggest need, but I think that that right there is probably the biggest need for the Patriots. Yeah. Offensively, what do you think? I mean, you know, the Tony Garcia thing is interesting because I think that they tried to prepare for the loss of Solder by drafting Garcia, just like they drafted Solder when Matt Light was going into his last year, and it was like, okay, right, we have a guy, and they did the same thing with Garcia. And if you look at Solder and Garcia, you know, Solder was clearly more polished and ready for the league, but very similar players, tall, athletic, quick feet, you know, and guys that were skinny, but you could build muscle onto them. Yep. And of course, Garcia gets, you know, the blood clots in his lungs. And so he misses the whole year and lost like 30 or 40 pounds. So now the question will be like, will he even be ready for this year?
Right.
Whereas, you know, I feel like they would have looked at it and said, that guy's going to be ready to play left tackle for us this year if he had been healthy last year. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Do you think that's the biggest need on offense, or, you know, do they need another wide receiver, or what do you think?
You know, Pat, it's interesting. I still think the left tackle, it remains the biggest need. And, you know, they did the right thing, similar to how we've talked about replacing Brady. They were a year ahead of schedule, like you said, when they drafted Garcia, who was a player that really stood out, you know, 2 years ago at the Senior Bowl. He just looked great down there. You know, he won a lot of people over down there with his athletic ability, his footwork, his hands, just – this was a guy that really rocketed up draft boards and then loses his entire rookie season. You do wonder if he's going to be able to come back, be in game shape, ready to go week one. Can he last a 17-week season? You do wonder about that. So I think they still have to bring in a left tackle or an offensive tackle at some point, whether it's early, whether it's, you know, again, it's not a deep class, but there are a couple of guys you could probably point to, like a Brian O'Neill from Pitt or Alex Kappa, the smallest kid from Humboldt State. And maybe you say, look, you know, we'll roll with Garcia if we can. If not, we've at least got somebody behind him.
Right.
I still think that's probably the biggest need. You know, tight end, I know they just signed Troy Nicholas, but with the Gronkowski rumors, they got basically nothing from Dwayne Allen. It's a good tight end class. I mean, there are guys that you're going to see, you know, in the late first round. The Gesicki kid from Penn State is probably a second round kid, but very athletic. I mean, just people were just blown away by him at the Senior Bowl. We were just wondering, I mean, where was this? Because at Penn State, he was running three routes, basically. He was running to the flat, he was running a wheel route, and he was running a seam route. And that was basically it. And now you see him running posts and digs, and he's a really athletic and just tests out the doors when he was in Indianapolis. And so, you know, he's an intriguing name. I don't know if they'd go that route early, but tight end, somewhat of a position you need. And, you know, wide receiver with the Cooks trade, you know, I thought that wide receiver was a sneaky position of need anyway, because Edelman was hurt. He's coming back off of an injury. You lose Amendola. You know, you might want to look at a slot guy, say day three, with like a Richie James or a Braxton Berrios, the kid from Miami. You probably still do that anyway. So those are three areas I think they probably address on offense.
Okay, nice. All right. And then, so you talked about Gronk. What do you think? I mean, do you think he, I mean, I think, in my opinion, I think he's back this year. The only question for me is kind of moving forward, you know, what is he going to do? The whole WWE thing to me, I just doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I just don't, you know, you hear the guys that are in WWE and they talk about the physical toll that it takes on their bodies and, you know, how hard they work at it and how much work they put into it. And yeah, they're having fun and they're entertaining the crowd, but they're like, it's just as physically demanding as football. And not only that, but I mean, and I know it's, you know, obviously they can kind of, you know, tailor it and he knows what's coming. And it's not like, you know, some guy's taking out your knee as you're running down the field. But, you know, from a like a back standpoint, like, you know, if your back is hurt, I don't see how the WWE is going to take any, you know, you're going to take any less of a beating there than you would on the football field. So that one to me doesn't make any sense. As far as acting is concerned, I don't know what the hell he's going to do with being an actor. Like, it just right. doesn't make any sense to me, you know? So I think he's back this year, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him retire in the next few years. And so I think you're kind of right about tight end, but what do you think about Gronk?
Yeah. I mean, having thought about Gronk and, you know, ever since the end of the Super Bowl and things like that, I really think that part of this is, you know, a negotiation ploy more than anything else, because, you know, in terms of what Gronk is making, like, yeah, you know, he's the highest paid tight end right now, at least in terms of total value. But then when you dig into the numbers a little bit, you know, he's not the highest paid in terms of average per year. You know, there are guys much, you know, making much more in terms of average per year. And then in terms of guaranteed money, that's where it really falls off. I mean, I think only, I'm looking at it right now, 24.4% of his contract is fully guaranteed. That's not much. When you're looking at a guy, again, these are two rookie guys, but OG Howard's contract is fully guaranteed. Evan Engram's contract, 96.5% of it is guaranteed. There are guys that are more like, you know, blocking type tight ends, like a Jermaine Gresham, nearly half of his contract is fully guaranteed. So I think Gronkowski, I did the numbers, he's like 35th in terms of tight ends, in terms of whether his contract is fully guaranteed or not. There are like 30 guys ahead of him that have more of their contract guaranteed. So I think this is what he's trying to do. He's probably got one more contract in him, because between the injuries, the interests away from football, the fact that, you know, things have taken a toll on him, he's probably got one more deal, and he's probably trying to put himself in a situation where he gets more guaranteed money, because again, he's been saving all of his salary. Remember, that's the story on him. He, you know, he spends his endorsement money, but he saves his salary money. He probably wants one more better guaranteed contract before he retires. And that's probably what he's angling for. Again, similar to Belichick, trying to get into Gronkowski's head. I mean, that's a scary place too, because you've got probably leprechauns, and it's like that Happy Gilmore scene with, you know, the grandma riding the tricycle and stuff. But yeah, I would have to guess that would be it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on board with you with that. And the other part of it too that you have to remember is that he bet on himself last year, right? He took a big incentivized deal where they kind of rewrote his deal and said, hey, you can be the highest paid tight end in the NFL if you reach these thresholds. And then he did. So now he's like, hey, look, we all know what I can do. Don't make me reach these again. Just pay me what I'm worth and guarantee it, so I don't have to worry about that crap.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so. And so, you know, something to consider too with this Cooks trade is, I don't think you make this trade if you're worried that Gronkowski's walking away. I mean, I think if you're worried that he's legitimately going to leave, you don't then trade a 1,000-yard receiver. I mean, even if there's some playbook concerns, even if, you know, we're hearing rumblings that he and Brady weren't always on the same page, it worked for the most part. I mean, it certainly worked at the end of that Houston game. And so, you know, I think the Super Bowl might have been a little bit differently had he not had that injury, had he not gotten knocked out. Maybe, you know, maybe things look a little differently. Who knows? But I think the fact that, you know, they traded him makes me think they're confident that Gronkowski is going to be back at least for next year. And then hopefully they try to work out something where he feels like he can finish his career in New England and on pretty good terms.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. I thought as soon as they made that deal, I was like, oh, that means Gronk's coming back.
Yeah.
One thing I will say, and I don't want to talk bad about Cooks because I think Cook's a good guy from all, you know, from what everyone said. He's a ridiculously hard worker, first guy in, last guy out type of guy. But I will say the Super Bowl in particular, you know, first of all, the play where he tried to hurdle the guy on third down before the missed field goal, I was like, "What? Put your foot in the ground and cut in the middle of the field. You get a first down easily."
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, Gostkowski ends up missing that field goal, and you're like, that could be a huge swing in the game where you pick up 7 points there instead of none. So right. That's obviously a huge swing. And then even the play where he got knocked out, it's like, what are you doing? Just catch the ball and run forward or just fall down. But don't just like stand there looking at people. It was just.
Yeah, you do almost sense it a wonder if, you know, it was again, I don't want to assume anything here, but those were two real lack of awareness type plays. And when a guy's in a Super Bowl like that for the first time, you wonder if, you know, he's trying to do too much in the moment. And it's like, look, just do what got you guys there. Like on that, you know, third down, just make a move. Like you said, put your foot in the ground, cut inside, take the guy on. Don't try to leap over him. I mean, that stuff you see in like little league games when a guy's trying to hurdle a catcher at home plate. And then, you know, the long catch where he got hurt, you know, get down, make sure you know where you are, like protect yourself. Like bodies are flying all over the place and you've got to be more aware in that situation to protect yourself. And he didn't. And I think it cost him.
Yeah. And the one other thing I'll say about him is that I felt like he had a good year. His numbers were good, but I felt like, you know, it was never the type of, he was never the guy where other teams were like, oh my God, we have to stop Brandon Cooks this game. You know, he's going to be a problem and we have to go out and stop him. And sure, you know, he made good plays throughout the year. And obviously, like you said, the Texans game where he made that sensational catch in the, you know, in the side of the end zone. But like, for the most part, it was like, he was good. But he wasn't great. He wasn't like a number one receiver. And I know we're a little bit spoiled here, you know, because Gronk was our number one receiver. And the last legit number one receiver we had was Randy Moss. So, like, it's kind of not fair to compare him to a guy like Randy Moss and even a guy like Edelman, I think, you know. But to me, it was just like I never saw that super explosiveness that, you know, people were talking about or that I expected to see. You look at his numbers his first few years in New Orleans, and I'm like, this guy's going to blow everyone away. He's going to catch balls and take it to the house. And I just never really saw that from him throughout the course of the year. And so when they made the deal, like I said, I was like kind of upset. And then more I thought of it, the more I was like, wow, actually, it turns out to be a pretty good deal. So we'll see. But, you know.
And part of it is you do wonder, you know, they bring in a guy like Brandon Cooks who, you know, people assume is going to be this like deep vertical threat for them. You do wonder if they just look at where Brady is right now. And Brady was never, you know, he can throw the deep ball. You know, he can do it from time to time. But they're not a vertical passing team. You know, they're more of a time and rhythm based offense that works in the short and intermediate areas of the field. You just do wonder if they've, you know, they tried it and they realized, look, it doesn't really fit. Like, it's not a schematic fit. And we're sort of wasting a spot where we could get another receiver that's, you know, somebody that works over the middle, that works underneath, that does that kind of stuff, that fits us more offensively. And we can get somebody like that. You know, maybe we have it in Philip Dorsett. Maybe we get it later in the draft. And it just makes more sense for us from a schematic standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I always felt too, like with Brady, where like you said, his deep ball is okay, but I feel like he's not super accurate with his deep ball. So you almost want a guy like Moss. I mean, obviously Moss is one of the greatest wide receivers of all time, but you want a guy like that who will go up and get the ball. And I feel like Kenny Britt is that type of receiver. Yeah. And so it's like, if you got to take a shot with, I mean, no, he's not super fast, but if you got to take a shot with somebody, maybe to be a guy like him where he can jump up and out jump guys and kind of get physical down the field where it doesn't have to be a perfect throw, you know, splitting defenders and stuff. He's just going to go up and get it. I feel like that's more, you know, that helps Brady out a little bit more because Brady's not super accurate with the deep ball.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting when, you know, not to rub salt in some wounds here, but when the Eagles made that move with Alshon Jeffrey, my immediate thought was, look, that's the best thing you can do for a quarterback, especially a young quarterback. He's a guy that's going to win in those contested catch situations. And what did we see early in the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. He wins a contested catch over Eric Rowe for a touchdown. And sometimes quarterbacks need a guy like that that they can trust and say, look, you know, I've got a shot here. I'm going to put it up. I'm going to trust this guy to go win the football for me. And maybe that's what they need. Is there a guy like that in this draft? I'm not so sure there is. You might have to do it a little bit earlier, like a James Washington type, but I don't know. But it's a very good point, Patrick. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see, you know. Now, what do you think? And I don't want to go like predictions for the year, but as far as the rest of the offseason, where do you think they address, you know, I guess the question would be like, where do you think they go from here? Do you think that they use all their picks? Do you think they're trading up? Do you think they're trying to trade for some play? Like, you know, I mean, I read somewhere they had, what was it, like one pick in the top 50 in the last like three seasons. And like the lowest people be after them was like four, you know, so they don't have that young talent. So, I mean, I almost look at it and think, you know, keep those three picks, get three young, talented guys to come in, but maybe they decide to trade up. I mean, what, you know, I know we already talked about it a little bit, but what do you think, like,
you know, sitting here tonight,
the end goal for them is?
Yeah. I mean, sitting here tonight, I think this is a draft where, you know, the sweet spot of this draft, I think, is in that sort of 20 to 80 range, you know, because the positions, there are some talented guys up there, but there are positions that, you know, like one of the guys up there is Saquon Barkley. One of the guys up there is Quentin Nelson. Like, I don't think the Patriots are going to like go real gung-ho to go get a running back or go get a guard when you've got guards. And so I think this is going to be one of those drafts where I think it would make sense for them. You've got five picks basically in that range, although one of them is 95. Use the five picks. Like, get five guys in that sort of, you know, first, second, third round range that can be plug and play types, whether it's a guy that's going to come in and start right away at the edge, or a guy that's going to come in and contribute right away at linebacker, a guy that's going to come in and win the backup quarterback job. I would say it's a Kyle Lauletta at 95 that maybe can take over for Brady in 2 years. You know, if they come away with, you know, an offensive tackle, an edge guy, a linebacker, a corner, and Kyle Lauletta at 95, I think that's a pretty solid draft from them, because you get four guys that can contribute, and maybe you do get that next Brady that everybody's been talking about. I think that makes sense to me. But again, Belichick will surprise us.
Right. It's a good point. That's a hell of an answer on the worst question ever asked in the history of podcasting.
I knew exactly what you were going for, buddy. So I'm right there with you, buddy.
I was right there. Nailed it. Thing about Kyle Lauletta that I think is interesting, and we talked about, you know, Belichick kind of doing the opposite of what everyone does. Well, now that we know that he does the opposite of what everyone does, him drafting Lauletta would actually be the opposite of what everyone thinks he's going to do. Right. And so maybe he'll draft Lauletta because now it's the opposite of – and now I've turned my brain to a pretzel. But the point is that, you know, I think that maybe it's a possibility.
You know, Mike Freeman sort of pointed this out yesterday after the Brandon Cooks move on Twitter. He said, look, when Belichick makes a trade, people start to wonder, what is it, what we're missing? What, because he's always – 2 to 3 steps ahead of everybody else. And so, like you said, Pat, we're starting to overthink the Lauletta love. That just makes him probably that much more likely that he's going to draft him, because he's like looking around. He's saying, oh, everybody's backing off. They're thinking, I don't like the guy. Then I'll go get him.
Right. That's crazy. It's just too, yeah. He just, it's so fun to watch him, because he's like, you know, it almost reminds you of like Red Auerbach. And, you know, I remember my dad telling me a story about, you know, Dave Cowens at Red Auerbach went to go watch a Dave Cowens game, and he just sat there with his arms crossed and just arms folded, just like pissed the entire game. And the game ends and he just walks out and he's just shaking his head, like, you know, pissed off. And, you know, Red's got like the number 2 overall pick, and so they don't draft the number 1, and he drafts a number 2, and it's like, turns out to be a Hall of Famer. It's like, and that's just, it feels like that's what he does, is he just, nobody knows what he's thinking. And so when you look at him and you think you know what he's thinking, then you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. You know, it's like when the Jets thought the Patriots loved the D tackle, what the hell was the D tackle's name? They traded up for and gave up a crap load to draft him, and he sucked. I think it was Dwayne Robertson. And
he
was like, and the Jets were like, the Patriots want this guy. Like, we have to draft him for the Patriots. And he was like, he was a bum, and the Patriots had zero interest in him whatsoever. But like, it was just kind of that whole convincing and making other people think something's going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we saw the, like 2 weeks ago, I think, when Belichick was at the NC State Pro Day, and he was talking to Bradley Chubb, the defensive end. He's like, we're picking a 31. You're not going to be there for us. Well, now that they made this trade, people are wondering, like, oh, he's going to go to try to get Bradley Chubb because he likes him so much. Of course not. Like, he knows he's not going to go get Bradley Chubb, and that's fine, because he'd rather get another edge player, but it makes people wonder.
Yeah. Without a doubt, you know, the trade makes that first Thursday a lot more exciting for Patriots fans, because usually, you know, that Thursday it's like, all right, Patriots are trading out, or they're not drafting anyone. Now they get two picks, and no one knows what the hell they're going to do. So At least it'll be entertaining. And so, you know, I mean, they could go a number of different ways. You know, the last time you said like they had two picks in the first round, they traded out and they traded up and got those two guys. But in 06, in 07, they had two first round picks. They traded one to San Francisco. They drafted Joe Staley. They picked up a fourth round pick and a first round pick in 08. The fourth round pick turned out to be Randy Moss, and the first round pick the next year turned out to be Gerard Mayo. So it's just like, you know, so you never know where they could go with it, but they acquire assets and good things happen. So it's nice to see them have two first round picks and add a little drama into our late April live.
Exactly. And you know, the thing is, evaluation and drafted, it's an inexact science. You're going to miss on guys. And so it's one of those situations where you get more bites of the apple. If you miss on one, but you have five picks in the first three rounds and you hit on the other four, that's a pretty good return. And so the fact that they've got these assets, I think this is the year to use them all.
Yeah, I like it. That should be fun. So anyways, Mark, where can people find you and interact with you?
Easiest place is on Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time at Mark Schofield. You can, you know, shoot me messages there. DMs are always open. People ask me for advice all the time. I'm happy to help the best I can. You can follow me at the work over at Inside the Pylon. You can follow the Locked On Patriots podcast, you know, usually four to five shows a week. Got a, you know, piece up on Pro Football Weekly. I'm contributing over there now, which is incredible because I grew up reading that, and now I'm writing for it, which is nutty. I got a piece up, you know, creating the best draft quarterback out of the, you know, bits and pieces, an arm and leg here from the other guys. Got a new piece coming in the next couple of days on scheme fits with some of the top quarterbacks. But easiest place as always is Twitter at Mark Schofield. You can just find me there.
Yeah, it's cool. I will say, I mean, the show is super informative. You know, unlike me, I'm just a fan who knows a little bit. You like, you study it, you know what you're doing. You're like super informative and diving deep into things. I mean, you know, anyone that's been listening can hear you when you're talking about, you know, the seventh rated wide receiver, you know, out of this, out of, you know, East Appalachian State. And you're like, oh, this guy's, you know, a good route runner. And it's like, what? Who's that guy? So, you know, if you're looking for, and it's also entertaining too. So it's not like you just like, yeah, so in the Patriots, I think we'll draft someone at, you know, so yeah, a little bit of spice into it, but also some really good information. So I think it's a good show. So
I appreciate that a lot, Patrick. I really do. Yeah, it's a fun show to do. And, you know, it lets me talk about the Patriots because, you know, try so hard to like not be a homer at times. It allows me to bring that side out, which has been fun. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And for me, I'm a season ticket holder and I've been a season ticket holder. My dad was a season ticket holder since the 60s. Awesome. And I've been a season ticket holder since 2000 when I was 16. And I sit in the end zone and I'm the loudest person in my end zone. And I'm always yelling. And people are like, you know, they can't hear you. And I'm like, I know, but I yell anyways. Right. And so, but now it's like people can hear me. You know, maybe it's not many, but people can still, I can say whatever I want and people can hear me and I can voice my opinions. And it's fun. It's just, you know, it's really fun. It's my first real off season doing it. And so for me, it's like interesting to see kind of where they'll go and we'll see what happens. So
it's fantastic, man. It's a fun little ride, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Just that's a lot of fun.
Getting the takes out there and seeing how it grows. So man, but you know, anything I do to help, buddy, let me know.
Yeah. I appreciate that. All right. Well, thank you. And have a great night. All right.
All right. Take care, Patrick.
All right, that was a great interview with Mark. Really appreciate him coming on. You really got to check him out if you haven't listened to his podcast yet, Locked On Patriots podcast. It's a really good one. Like I said at the show, at the end of the episode, or the end of the interview, I should say, you know, it's really informative. Guy knows what he's talking about. So follow him on Twitter, listen to his show, and you can read his stuff too, Inside the Pylon, and like he said, PFW as well. So again, big thanks to him coming on. So let's get into some segments here. We got our two segments, the three-minute drill, and this week in sports history, we're going to start with the three-minute drill. And, you know, I know we're talking Patriots this week. I like the three-minute drill because I can just kind of talk about whatever I want. So here it comes. We'll start the 3 minutes, and let's go. So I want to talk about Ray Allen today. I really think, you know, Ray Allen was on with Prez from Barstool doing a pizza review. And I just, you know, it brought up some interesting things for me with Ray Allen. I just think we're still kind of holding against him. We're still upset at him that he left and went to Miami. And look, I hate LeBron as much as the next guy, and I know for a fact that they don't win the championship without Ray Allen that year, and that stinks. So it's like Ray Allen went, and they won the championship, and they wouldn't have won without him, and that kind of pisses me off that he almost won LeBron his first championship in Miami. But at the same time, I think you have to look at it from Ray Allen's perspective, and you know, Ray was right because he said, he's like, everybody was talking. everybody was saying things. The Celtics were saying things, and LeBron was saying things, and you know the Celtics players were saying things. But the only one wasn't saying anything was Ray Allen. And Ray Allen's real, true story, you know, comes out, and it's like, hey, look, Boston, what do you want me to do? What am I going to do? Who am I going to be on this team? And they couldn't give him an answer because they didn't want to give him an answer because they had a young guy in Avery Bradley that they wanted to bring up, and they thought he could be the next shooting guard, which he was the next shooting guard. But he wasn't better than Ray Allen. And, you know, I think it was a legitimate concern for Ray that he didn't have a place in Boston and that they didn't really want him. And so when you start to look at it and say, okay, it wasn't about Miami. It wasn't about going to Miami. It was about leaving Boston. It was about saying, I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel like they are going to use me to the best of my abilities. And yes, did the Celtics offer him more? Yes, they did. But at the end of the day, he's looking at it saying, well, I want to play, right? And I want to understand that this team wants me. And he didn't feel like the Celtics wanted him. And I think that you can look at that and say, well, that's fair. You know, and people, even now, when you talk about the big three, you talk about Pierce and you talk about Garnett and you almost talk about Ray as kind of like, well, yeah, he was there too. He was an integral part of this team for a long time. And again, you know, he wins that championship for LeBron. LeBron doesn't win that championship without him. So, and he was a very good player for a very long time in this league. And I think, you know, he's generally overlooked just because he played on some really bad teams. But towards the end of his year, you know, towards the end of his career, he started playing on some really good teams. He was fantastic with the Celtics, obviously. And then he went to Miami and like I said, won them a championship at that big three in the corner. And so you start looking at him and his career and you look at it from a little bit different perspective. He didn't leave here to go to Miami because he wanted to go to Miami. He left here because he wasn't happy. And then his decision was, I'm not going back to Boston. Where am I going to go? And so he decided, there we go. And so he decided to go to Cleveland. So I think it's just changing your perspective a little bit, where it wasn't like I'm choosing Cleveland over Boston. It was, I'm not choosing Boston because I don't feel like they want me. So who wants me? And Cleveland wanted him and obviously had an opportunity to compete for a championship, and that's where he chose to go. And so I think if you look at it from that perspective, to me at least, I don't know how you can still be pissed at Ray Allen. That's just me personally. I think he's a great guy, great actor. He got game. And, you know, I just think we need to let bygones be bygones at this point. That's my opinion. But KG may feel differently, but that's my opinion. So let's get to this weekend sports history. This weekend sports history, I'm going to do it chronologically as always. So April 7th, 1928. New York Rangers 44-year-old general manager Lester Patrick replaces his injured goaltender in a Stanley Cup game and wins, beating the Montreal Maroons 2-1. So I thought this was kind of a fun one because of the whole Scott Foster thing that happened last week. So if you don't know this, Scott Foster is a 36-year-old accountant who is an emergency goalie for Chicago. He was called up, and every now and again, he'll be called up to kind of watch the game from the ninth floor, just, you know, as a precaution. If two guys go down, they have a third guy there. But he actually ended up getting in the game. Was the backup goaltender. The starting goalie got hurt, and so he replaced them, stopped 7 of 7 shots. And so I just thought it was kind of funny that, you know, back in 1928, this is a Stanley Cup game. It was the finals game, and, you know, the 44-year-old GM steps out on the ice and they win the game 2-1. So kind of an interesting story there. So, and then April 4th, 1983, NC State beats Houston and Akeem Olajuwon to win the NCAA title. Fun fact about that is that Akeem was the last player to win MVP of the tournament without actually winning the championship. Won MVP of the tournament, they lost obviously in the championship game to NC State. That was the Jimmy V team. You know, is that famous last shot. If you've never seen it, it's that famous last shot. Derek Wittenberg attempts a ridiculously long three, and Lorenzo Charles jumps up and dunks it literally at the buzzer. And they win the game, and Jimmy V, you know, is that great clip of Jimmy V just kind of running around like a madman, like not sure who, like doesn't know who he's going to hug first, like just grabbing people, looking for someone to like jump onto, and, you know, couldn't really find anyone. So that was a great moment. And obviously, a few years later, Jimmy V gives the award, gives the speech at the ESPYs after winning the Arthur Ashe Award, and is dying of cancer and whatnot, and gives, in my opinion, just one of the best speeches of all time that's ever happened at any award show. If you haven't seen that, honestly, just type in Jimmy V ESPYs speech. It is beautiful. It's so well done, and it's really a great kind of look at life, right? And and obviously the Jimmy V Foundation has come from that, and they've raised tons of millions of dollars for cancer research. And so, you know, but that's kind of where the Jimmy V name really started, was in that championship run. And they were number 6 seed, and they're one of the lowest champions, one of the lowest teams seeds to ever win the championship. Obviously the lowest is Villanova. They were number 8 seed, but they're a pretty low seed to win a championship. So those are my This Week in Sports histories. And thank you for following along this episode. Don't forget, first of all, we want to thank Mark for coming on the show. So make sure you follow him at Mark Schofield online. Go to InsideThePylon.com and follow his writing and his stuff. Make sure you're subscribed and rated Locked On Patriots podcast. Again, solid show, and we appreciate him coming on and taking his time out to talk with me tonight. Also want to thank Marcus from the Boxers podcast for the intro song. Just absolute fire. Love it. And make sure you catch the Boxers podcast every Mondays. Mondays is Movie Mondays. Check them out. Also, Honor the Triforce. And you can rate, subscribe, and review the Boxers on Mondays, Mac and Goo on Tuesdays, and the hashtag Dork podcast on Wednesdays. Also, the outro song, we're going to actually skip the outro song this week, because I'm going to put the Jimmy V speech at the end of this episode, because it's so good that I'm going to put it there. So for your enjoyment, if you haven't heard it before, you'll get it. But typically, the outro song comes from M.Dot and Core. M.Dot is on Instagram and Twitter at M.D.O.T. Boston. And Core is on Twitter at Core of EMS, Core with a K. So K-O-R-E of E-M-S. As for me, I am on Twitter. You can follow the show at Weekend War Pod. Weekend with no E. So W-K-N-D-W-A-R-P-O-D. You can follow my personal account at WTP Lane, and follow along with those two. Right now, I'm doing kind of a little bit of a weight loss challenge, using a hashtag out there, hashtag no more excuses. If you're trying to lose weight and keep kind of pushing it off and just say, I'll get to it next week, or I'll get to it tomorrow, or I'll eat better, in the next few days or whatever, stop making excuses, okay? And you can get on the train with me, use the hashtag no more excuses. And WTP Sports is actually giving away a t-shirt a week to anyone who is, or not anyone, but to a random person who is using the hashtag and tagging at WTP Sports. So do that, follow along, and we can kind of get healthy together. So anyways, thank you for listening very much, and we'll see you next week. And here is the Jimmy V speech for you. Have a great week.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's the lowest I've ever seen Dick Vitale since the owner of the Detroit Pistons called him in and told him he should go into broadcasting. Right? I can't tell you what an honor it is to even be mentioned the same breath with an Arthur Ashe. This is something I certainly will treasure forever. But As was said on the tape, I don't have one of those things going with the cue cards, so I'm going to speak longer than anybody else has spoken tonight. That's the way it goes. Time is very precious to me. I don't know how much I have left, and I have some things that I would like to say. Hopefully, at the end, I'll have something that will be important to other people, too. But I can't help it. Now when I'm fighting cancer, everybody knows that. And people ask me all the time about how you go through your life and how's your day. And nothing has changed for me, as Dick said. I'm a very emotional, passionate man. I can't help it. That's being the son of Rocco and Angelina Valvano. That just comes with the territory, right? We hug, we kiss, we love. And when people say to me, how do you get through life or each day, it's the same thing. To me, there are three things we all should do every day. If we do this every day of our life, You're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day. You do that 7 days a week, you're going to have something special. And so I can't help. I rode on the plane up today with Mike Krzyzewski, my good friend and a wonderful coach. What people don't realize, he's a 10 times better person than he is a coach. And we know he's a great coach. He's meant a lot to me in these last 5 or 6 months of my battle. But when I look at Mike, I think we competed against each other as players. I coached against him for 15 years. And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day. And, you know, when I think about getting up and giving a speech, I can't help it. I have to remember the first speech I ever gave. I was coaching at Rutgers University. That was my first job. Wonderful. And I was the freshman coach. That's when freshmen played on freshman teams. And I was so fired up about my first job. I see Lou Holtz, Coach Holtz here. What was it like the first job you had, right? The very first time you stood in the locker room to give a pep talk. That's a special place, the locker room, for a coach to give a talk. So my idol as a coach was Vince Lombardi. And I read this book called Commitment to Excellence by Vince Lombardi. And in the book, Lombardi talked about the first time he spoke before his Green Bay Packer team in a locker room. There were perennial losers. And I'm reading this, and Lombardi said he was thinking, should it be a long talk, a short talk? But he wanted to be emotional. He said, be brief. And this is what he did. He normally you get in a locker room, I don't know, 25 minutes, a half hour before the team takes the field. You do your little X and O's, and then you give the great Newt Rockne talk. We all do. Speech number 84. You pull them right out. You get ready. Get your squad ready. Well, this is the first one I ever gave. And I read this thing, Lombardi. What he said was he didn't go in. He waited. His team was wondering, where is he? Where is this great coach? He's not there. 10 minutes. He's still not there. 3 minutes before they have to take the field, Lombardi comes in, bangs the door open. And I think you all remember what great presence he had. Right? Great presence. And he walked in, and he just walked back and forth like this, just staring at the players. And he said, all eyes on me. And I'm reading this in this book, and I'm getting a picture of this Lombardi before his first game. And he said, gentlemen, we will be successful this year. You can focus on three things and three things only: your family, your religion, and the Green Bay Packers. And the rest of it, they knocked the walls down. The rest was history. I said, that's beautiful. I'm going to do that. Your family, your religion, and Rutgers basketball. That's it. I had it. I'm 21 years old. The kids I'm coaching are 19. All right? And I'm going to be the greatest coach in the world, the next Lombardi. And I'm ready. And I'm practicing out right beside the locker room. The manager's telling me, you got to go in. Not yet. Family, religion, Rutgers basketball. All eyes on me. I got it. And now finally he said, 3 minutes. I said, fine. True story. I go to knock the doors open, just like Lombardi. Boom! It didn't open. I almost broke my arm. I was like, it was when it didn't open. Now I'm down. The players are looking. You know, coach, help the coach up. Help him up. You know? And now I did like Lombardi. I walked back and forth, right? And I was going like that with my arm, get the feeling back in it. And finally I said, gentlemen, all eyes on me. And these kids wanted to play. They're 19. Let's go. I said, gentlemen, we'll be successful this year if you can focus on three things and three things only. They said, yeah. I said, your family, your religion, and the Green Bay Packers, I told them. I did that. I remember that. I remember where I came from. It's so important to know where you are. And I know where I am right now. How do you go from where you are to where you want to be? And I think you have to have an enthusiasm for life. You have to have a dream, a goal, and you have to be willing to work for it. I talked about my family. My family is so important. People think I have courage. The courage of my family is my wife, Pam, my three daughters here, Nicole, Jamie, Leanne, my mom, who is right here too. And the screen is flashing up there 30 seconds, like I care about that screen right now, huh? I got tumors all over my body. I'm worried about some guy in the back going 30 seconds, huh? You got a lot. Hey, phenomenal, buddy. You got a lot. All right, this is really good. I just got one last thing. I urge all of you, to enjoy your life, the precious moments you have, to spend each day with some laughter and some thought, to get your emotions going, to be enthusiastic every day. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said, nothing great can be accomplished without enthusiasm, to keep your dreams alive in spite of problems, whatever you have, to be able to work hard for your dreams to become, to come true, become a reality. Now I look at where I am now, and I know what I want to do. What I would like to be able to do is to spend whatever time I have left and to give and maybe some hope to others. All right, Arthur Ashe Foundation is a wonderful thing. And AIDS, the amount of money pouring in for AIDS is not enough, but it is significant. But if I told you it's 10 times the amount that comes in for cancer research, I also tell you that 500,000 people will die this year of cancer. And I also tell you that one in every four will be afflicted with this disease. And yet, for somehow, we seem to have put it in a little bit of the background. I want to bring it back on the front table. We need your help. I need your help. We need money for research. It may not save my life. It may save my children's lives. It may save someone you love. And it's very important. And ESPN has been so kind to support me in this endeavor and allow me to announce tonight that with ESPN's support, which means what? Their money and their dollars, and they're helping me. We are starting the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research. And its motto is, don't give up, don't ever give up. And that's what I'm going to try to do. Every minute that I have left, I will thank God for the day and the moment I have. And if you see me, smile and maybe give me a hug, because that's important to me too. But try, if you can, to support, whether it's AIDS or the Cancer Foundation, so that someone else might survive, might prosper, and might actually be cured of this dreaded disease. I can't thank ESPN enough for allowing this to happen, and I'm going to work as hard as I can, you know, for cancer research, and hopefully we'll be, maybe we'll have some cures and some breakthroughs, and I'd like to think, I'm going to fight my brains out to be back here again next year for the Arthur Ashe recipient. I want to give it next year. I know I've got to go. I've got to go, and I've got one last thing. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. I thank you, and God bless you all.